at wowdiamonds.com.
Newsetter's fine jewelry.
We know what women want.
Truman's in Soulard is your neighborhood sports bar. Truman's takes pride in offering the best food and affordable drink prices for a family-friendly bar so everyone can enjoy it. Truman's is a great spot to catch the game with $14 buckets during Blues and Cardinals games. Or jump on the free shuttle that will take you to the stadium for all Blues and Cardinals home games. Come out for Trivia Wednesdays from 7 to 9 or Karaoke Fridays from 9 to midnight. Check out TrumansInSoulard.com to see what they're all about.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby
right now. I'm in the lobby.
To get ourselves a treat.
If you want, you can do like we do and sneak stuff into the movie theater. We sneak M&Ms in.
My wife takes everything.
My wife takes bottled water and sometimes popcorn in a big purse. Yeah.
Ooh.
She's done that too.
That's creative.
I told you one time we took fried chicken in. That was not a good idea.
I snuck in a bunch of candy from Walgreens last week.
Oh, Walgreens. Walgreens has almond M&Ms. Nobody has almond M&Ms, but they always do.
Is there going to be M&Ms of every kind?
I hope
pretzel,
not.
Pretzel, almond?
I hope not. M&Ms should be three kinds. Four. Regular, peanut butter, peanut, and almond. That's it. Yeah. That's it.
Now they have white chocolate M&Ms.
No,
the color is similar because I'm partially colorblind, so I thought I was buying peanut M&Ms.
Mm.
And when you are expecting to bite into a peanut M&M and you bite into a white chocolate,
it's like when you take a drink of something and you thought you grabbed a glass of milk, but it was grapefruit juice.
Yes.
More in California, they tested broccoli M&Ms.
Oh, come on.
No, California
would probably do that.
Frank,
what? May 21st, fools.
May 21st, fools.
I was going to say broccoli M&Ms would be...
Well done, mate.
You know, the only thing is, in California, that actually wouldn't surprise me.
It wouldn't surprise me.
What sold it was that I included California in May 21st.
Imagine worse than that. Salmon M&Ms.
You can get a salmon Kit Kat in Japan, right?
Oh, come on.
I'm not kidding. It's got chocolate, it's got wafer, it's got fish, and then it's got more chocolate.
Oh, that's disgusting.
That's the end.
That sounds horrible.
That's the end
of the world. That's what that is.
They should do that in movies. Get the chainsaw. No, get the salmon M&Ms. We'll just torture them.
I can tolerate the peanut butter. I like the peanut. Almond is the very best to me. And, of course, plain, if you can't get a hold of any of the other ones, you plain M&Ms. But I don't want to eat popcorn without chocolate. You can drizzle it on the popcorn, or you can give me a chocolate bar, but I want popcorn and chocolate mushed together in my mouth at the same time before I take a big, as my dad would say, swig of regular Coke. Whew, now you're talking.
Yeah.
The only drink I can drink with Chinese food is Coke. Regular Coke. I don't want any other drink. I don't want hot tea.
I don't mind Chinese iced tea. I like iced tea.
Well, that'd be my second choice, I guess. I need to tell people and remind them that you're brought to them by Window World, the number one selling replacement window in the United States. WindowWorldSt.Louis.com for more information. And I'm going to throw out the phone numbers. If you have a movie or a TV show or a series or something you found, what's so funny? What is so funny?
Nothing. I'm just working on a new Playhouse intro thing. That's all. Sorry.
You're doing something else while we're doing this?
Yeah, I'm very sorry.
He's producing the show as the show's going on.
There you go.
That's what makes him unique.
Don't be sorry, man. Few people could do that.
Yeah.
Right. Sorry, right, yeah.
So Dan can't even just ask the phone and get it right.
What? I mean,
nothing. Nothing.
I'm really excited for the Playhouse now.
So, WindowWorldSt.Louis.com. Hey, before we get into that, off the air we're talking about something, and I'm not kidding about this. This is something I think people need to understand, and we need to learn more about it. This medical marijuana thing in Missouri, the bill that was passed, and I didn't know it till it was over, and I don't think most people did. Based on everything I can read, and I just read an article just now when Tim was doing the news from the Kansas City Star. If you get a medical marijuana card in the state of Missouri, you lose your right to own a firearm.
What the hell?
No,
let me,
exactly.
Now let me ask a question. This is not even. This is not concealed carry. This
is
at all.
Possess a firearm.
Wow.
Hang on a second.
Come to your house and go. Show me your weed. Show me your gun.
Now, let me read. I mean, I was all about getting a medical marijuana card, and I don't own a gun now. But there may be a time down the road when I would like to, whether for security, recreation, or shooting.
Here's the link to the article. It says Missourians cannot have medical marijuana and a gun, according to the law. Here is the Kansas City Star article, the first part of the article. What?
Stoners don't go on rampages.
No. Here's the problem.
They're too relaxed.
Exactly.
They're happy.
The law existed about being in a drugged condition and having a firearm before the whole Medical Marijuana Act came, so that they had to write it, and they're barring a constitutional law being overturned. The law in Missouri reads, a person commits the offense of unlawful possession of a firearm if a person knowingly has any firearm in his or her possession and is habitually in an intoxicated or drugged condition. It's a Class B felony in Missouri. They had to put it in there because it's in the law.
It's wrong.
I understand that, but it's wrong.
Look, why don't they have that with alcohol? If you have alcohol and you drink, you can't have a gun.
Alcohol
far
is
more
much more dangerous.
Thank you.
Than marijuana.
It does say that. It's the law says if a person is habitually in an intoxicated or drug condition, that's the baseline of the law.
Okay, habitually. What's the definition of habitually? It's a gray area.
Great question.
Right, can you do it like on a regular basis, maybe?
Here's the headline in the Kansas City Star. Medical marijuana or your gun. In Missouri, you will have to make a choice. Listen, it says federal law prohibits medical marijuana users from possessing or buying firearms and ammunition, even if state law allows the drug use. It doesn't say anything about habitual. It doesn't say anything about being incapacitated. It says if you have a medical marijuana card, you cannot possess or buy firearms. This is communism. Listen to this. It says that likely will come as a surprise to many Missourians who supported the legislation of medical marijuana in the state. Well, I guarantee you it's a surprise. It says there are no exceptions, according to the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, which means Missouri residents will not legally be able to have a license for medical marijuana and possess a firearm at the same time. Wow! There would go any interest that I ever had in medical marijuana. This is another way, a roundabout way, they're trying to take guns away from people.
Eventually, they're just going to legalize marijuana, but I wonder.
They'll have to.
But I wonder, before you get your license to buy, I wonder, they say, do you own a gun? And
well, that's the thing. As I was saying earlier, right? Like, I would love to have a medical marijuana card. It'd be great. I'd be walking around here with red eyes all the time. But, as I said, I don't know at this moment in my life if I want to buy a gun. You know, maybe in the next 10 or 15 years, I want to buy a gun and I won't need the medical marijuana card.
But then you wouldn't be able to because you have a medical marijuana card.
Let me just go and be an outlaw here. Could you just, like, own a gun?
The elephant in the room here that's not being discussed, that we all know it, and maybe none of us are just saying it. I'll say it. Mm-hmm. Anybody who owns a gun will have no problem getting black market marijuana in the state of Missouri.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, that's true.
You just won't have to legally do it yourself.
Oh, hold on. They won't have any trouble getting a medical marijuana card legally if they own a gun. Because they're not going to go up and say, oh, I own a gun. Can I get a medical? They're not going to say anything.
Right.
They'll have to discover it.
They're going to have like the marijuana card, and they're just going to go, I'm going to keep my rifle hidden in my
house. And that's fine until, let's say something happens.
Home inspection.
Somebody breaks in your house. You shoot them. And they go, oops, we see that you have a medical marijuana card. You had no business having that gun that saved your family's life. You're going to jail. No. It's a messed up thing. It is messed up.
What's going on? What are all these new, like you said, fascists? It's like it's coming back.
Mm-hmm.
What's going to have to happen is marijuana is going to have to be treated like alcohol, which I think is, we have far bigger problems with alcohol.
How many DWIs every month?
They're going to have to lift this thing about if you have a medical marijuana or lift the whole federal illegality of marijuana.
So let me ask a question. Is this in play or is this in a thought? Is this a proposed
bill? No, this is part of the bill that's already passed. Once these clinics are set up, and Tim had the story about one now that's taking applications, I guarantee you these people have no idea that by getting this medical marijuana card, you're now committing a crime if you own a gun and don't turn it in. I'm not turning any guns in.
No.
When we get to that point, time to leave.
That's it. It's going to be Mad Max territory out there.
That has nothing to do with TV or movies
or
anything.
Well, actually, I'll tell you what. We're talking about guns, and the movie I'm going to review has a lot of guns in it.
Oh, I know.
Maybe the guy who was the star may have had a little
I may want to see this, and I'll tell you why. The star's Keanu Reeves. I watched a YouTube video that they took of him training for this movie.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
It's intense. He trained with 8711, the stunt studio that's led up by the director of the movie, Chad Stahelski, who was his stunt double in The Matrix. That's why he chose him to be in this movie. And what he said, and maybe they said this in the video, usually you train an actor to look good. You train him a few moves.
Right.
They train these actors to be stunt people.
Right.
Him and Halle Berry, who's in this movie. I mean, they chose... She had to go... This is what he did. 6 months. 6 hours a day. I mean, because if they don't do this, they don't look the way they have to... I mean, because they have to unload and load weapons. They have to do all the moves. Keanu Reeves is 54 years old, and he's flipping people.
No way, really? Wow.
He's 54. And he's doing all these stunts. And he said, you like get into wick mode, is basically what he calls it.
Yeah. And I want to see it now.
Well, guess what?
And before you get into it, John Wick, again, my question. Do I need to go watch the first one?
No, you don't, but I recommend doing it because it's an incredible movie.
I recommend doing it because I brought the first one for you.
He's got it over there.
You're the man.
There's two. I mean, and I would say I agree with Limey. Not like it's a much-needed thing, but the third one starts off right after the second one.
Okay.
Like, it picks up right after.
So if I watch one, I'll be good to go, right?
Yeah, you kind of get the basics.
Yeah, but you might want to watch two, because the plot of two leads directly into three. Like, the third movie picks up 10 minutes after the
second one.
All right,
well, let's jump right in. This is the movie,
this
obviously.
This is 2014 was when this then really small-budget film by Chad Stahelski, he used to be a stunt guy. He turned into a director. That's what's going on right now. Directors can now be stuntmen. They bring that experience to action. And he got Keanu Reeves to be in this movie. And he was his stunt double in The Matrix. So he knew Keanu really well. And the whole thing is that John Wick is a retired assassin in the beginning of... Let's just go back to the first one before I review this. The third one. The third one just came out Friday. It's called John Wick Chapter 3 Parabellum. And the first one came out, and he was a retired...
Not just one bellum, but a pair.
Parabellum.
Thank you!
It is... Supposedly, I looked it up, it's a Latin phrase that means prepare for war. That is what...
I didn't want to sound stupid, but I'm sitting here thinking, I don't even know what parabellum is.
Me neither. I didn't know. Like, well, what's going on? Why don't you just say there's going to be a lot of killing? John Wick 3, chapter kill, and people die. In John Wick, he was a retired assassin. And his wife just died. And in her dying will, she gives John Wick a dog. Well, knowing that it's an action film, John Wick runs into some Russian gangsters, and they kind of break into his house, beat him up, and they kill his dog.
Oh, boy. Now you're
done.
Right?
And that's it.
Now
that's the whole crutch of the movie, is that, number one, he
lost
his...
Is this happening in the first episode?
Yes. First 10 minutes.
Of the one you're going to make me watch.
So you're seeing this guy, and you're thinking, he looks pretty. He looks pretty tame. He's relaxed. And
well, this is the guy who goes, whoa.
Yeah. He is. He's very relaxed. Let's just say John Wick probably partakes in some weed.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way. He is he loses his wife and he loses the dog. And so then he goes after the mob. And basically it's his revenge tale. And the thing about these movies, Frank, is that it's a lot of tongue-in-cheek humor. There's a lot of laughs. Because when the gangster calls and he goes, well, why did you punch my kid? And the guy goes, well, he stole John Wick's car and he killed his dog. And the gangster's like, oh, Baba Yaga. That's what they call him, Baba Yaga.
The boogeyman.
The boogeyman. And he goes, John Wick's a nobody, his son tells his dad, who's a gangster.
Who was John Wick that they did this
to? He's basically a retired assassin, but they don't know this. These Russian thugs just kind of beat him up and kill his dog. They think he's another guy. And he's not.
Basically, John Wick was the guy, like, when these Russian gangsters had quarrels with another gang, they would send in John Wick to just kill them all.
He's a retired assassin, probably one of the best. He's got a reputation. Mm-hmm. So
why do they want to mess with him and mess up his life?
It's just a random thing. These Russian thugs see him at a gas station. He's driving a really nice car. Is it a Mustang?
It's a 69
Mustang. It's
69?
It's a classic Mustang. And
hey,
so,
hang on, excuse me. Hey, we have a guest in today, and I would appreciate it if you wouldn't do the 69 laughing, because nobody knows why that's funny.
I'll never get it.
It's a very nice car, let's put it that way. And of course, these guys are collecting cars. So they think this guy's a regular guy. Let's take his car. And of course, they find out that he's a legendary assassin.
Oh, so they hit the wrong guy.
They hit the wrong guy. Mm-hmm. And as the one guy, Michael Nyquist, who played the, he died a couple years ago.
Oh, no way.
The guy that played the gangster, he's like, "You messed with John Wick. I once saw this man kill three guys with a pencil." A pencil!
And it's, you know, just, what? I'm in. Yeah, I'm going to watch this.
I know.
This.
And I like it's funny. It. So the second film is more like, it's a continuation of his adventures. He gets one job done, but he keeps getting pulled back in. He keeps trying to retire, but he can't. And in the third film, he's on the run. And in these movies, there's a kind of a society of hitmen, and there's a hotel called the Continental. And the thing about this hotel is you cannot do any killing in this hotel. And if you do, you will be called excommunicado. You will be basically stricken from its protection. And so what does John Wick do? Spoiler alert, Frank, I'm sorry.
Kills everybody.
He kills somebody on continental grounds in the second movie. So in the third film, he is excommunicado. He is wanted by every hitman, not just in New York City, in the world.
And that's a bad position to be in.
$14 million price tag on his head. So in the beginning of the third film, he is on the run with his dog. He gets another dog, by the way, a beautiful pit bull. And he's just running throughout New York, trying to get sanctuary wherever he can. So the third film is essentially like the first two, but I liked it better because there were stakes involved. It's real
Porter
time.
Porterhouse, New York Strip, what kind of stakes?
Different
fine.
See what I did there? In this case, it's a filet.
Tube steak.
Yeah. Tube steak, yes.
Tube steak.
Well, no, and if Halle Berry's in a movie, it's definitely a tube steak.
Right. People like my wife go, what's a tube steak?
Hot dog. Yeah.
But this movie, the thing about these movies that, other than the humor, is the action is very well done. The director, he made a point because he hated the way that other movies, when there's an action scene, the camera's up close, you can't tell who's hitting who, it's claustrophobic. So what he does with the John Wick movies, he pans out with his camera. And so you can see it's Keanu Reeves throwing the punches, taking the kicks, he's flipping guys. It's all like authentic.
I don't like the fact that you just said comedy. Is this supposed to be?
No. It's more like tongue-in-cheek, kind of like winking at you humor. It's okay. Just a little bit of comedy just to kind of lighten things up. I mean,
it's like that humor that, you know, you're not really supposed to laugh at, right, but you're gonna.
But it kind of brings a smile to your face. I mean, there's no Seth Rogen laugh in this movie. Let's put it that way.
Okay, so sort of like the Dirty Harry thing.
Yeah, like that.
Do you feel lucky?
Yeah.
Okay, that didn't bother me.
And the thing is, the reason the character is so good for Keanu Reeves, he answers things in like these little things like, "Yeah, I'm back." That's all he says. I mean, he says it in a way where it's like, "Yeah, okay, it's funny that way." It's more like a very light brand of humor, not slapstick, stupid joke.
I think
comedy.
I'm gonna like this.
But in the third film, especially, he's just on the run, and the whole movies are him just having to go through every hitman they send his way, and the action is it's like an action ballet. I mean, just the way they film it, because it's all judo, it's martial arts, and I'd like to
mention, if you allow me,
go ahead.
And this is absolutely true. I've mentioned it a couple of times. I studied and went through advanced judo. I'm not kidding.
Oh, sorry. Maybe you'll be in John Wick 4.
I was picked on at about 17 by some bad brothers. It's like a movie. They were brothers, and they were out to
How many of them?
Beat me. Four. They're out to
four
beat me up, yeah. So I went to Belleville. I lived in O'Fallon, in Fairview Heights. So I go to Belleville to a judo a dojo, and I have the white jacket. You remember? And I went through not only the judo regular, I went all the way through the advanced classes and to the point where you start working on your belts, the different colors. And then I bowed out then because I thought, I know enough now to plant their faces in the asphalt.
There's got to be a video of this somewhere.
No, there's not. Oh, and here's the other thing. It's kind of like a dash cam. Once I put a dash cam in my car, nothing happened in front of me. I get to judo, and they don't pick on me anymore. They stop picking on me. Maybe word got out, hey, he studied judo, and then I couldn't even use it.
Well, I remember when somebody, after the first film came out, the director was like, you don't want to mess with Keanu Reeves now, because he goes through this training for 6 months.
Yeah,
you know
real
it.
Deal.
You know it.
Do you know what Mexican judo is?
Oh, no.
You don't know if I have a knife. You don't know if I have a gun.
Racist. That's racist, all. Yeah. I just thought I'd throw that out there in case anybody wants to.
No, I mean,
still remember two. I still remember two moves that push it down.
And as you could tell when you watch that video with John Wick behind the scenes, I mean, he's doing everything in this movie. And for me, that's a big deal. Because I reference this all the time. Die Hard with Bruce Willis. And there's a scene where he is being he's being shoved into a wall, and I can tell that's not Bruce Willis.
Yeah.
And it made me mad. I was like, Dad, if his name's on that poster, on that poster, that better be him.
Yeah.
Like Tom Cruise was hanging off an airplane in a Mission Impossible movie.
Yeah.
So he does all of it, and they're really good movies. And the thing about these films are they're cheap. They made John Wick 3, and if you look at the way they're filmed and the scope and all the action, for $55 million. That's like what 2 months of Avengers cost to make. And in the first weekend, it made back its entire budget in the first weekend. It knocked off Avengers Endgame. It made $57 million this past weekend. So there will be a chapter 4.
I wonder why him. Why can't I wonder who decided this? Because I would never have thought.
I kind of have an answer. I kind of have an answer. Yeah, Chad Stahelski, the director, was his stunt double in The Matrix.
Okay.
And so he knew that, okay, I can trust this guy to get the moves right. And I think that you need kind of an athletic actor, but not one who's like The Rock. You don't want anybody who's just overly big. You want somebody who's just kind of thin and athletic.
I never saw The Matrix, because once I saw the trailer and saw him stopping in midair and stuff, I thought, I'm out.
The first one's great. The last two are, okay.
Flew too close to someone.
But I think this is like his crown jewel as far as a role, but it's perfect for him. It's not a lot of dialogue. It's all action. It's all physical. And, I tell you what, John Wick, Keanu Reeves, he's like a really nice guy. All you hear about is these stories about how he was on a plane and had to be landed, and he gave everybody a ride, and he's just this really nice guy. There's a really cool story this guy put on Twitter. He's like, 10 years ago, Keanu Reeves comes to my theater to watch a movie. And right away, he walks up to the box office, and the guy was like, this is Keanu Reeves. This is Keanu Reeves. And he goes, he had nothing for him to sign.
Yeah.
And so Reeves buys his ticket and goes to the concession stand and buys something. And he knocks on the box office door and goes, here's my receipt. I signed it for you. I knew you wanted an autograph. And he tosses the cone. So he basically just went to the concession stand just to buy something so he could sign this guy's autograph. He's just a really good dude. And I don't know, maybe that plays into it when you're watching him. But
it was just a shame when he had the horse accident. That was Christopher Reeve.
Superman! Frank. Superman!
Thank you, Hank.
There's judo. Is there Catholic dough and Baptist dough?
I knew you were going to do it.
I think
I'm
racist. Lame.
You think I'm lame.
I swear.
Wow, that was bad.
That was inappropriate. Man.
That was bad.
Presbyterian dough?
That's enough. Yeah.
They make bagels out of that.
Methodist dough.
How many? So we just get right to the ARDs for John Wick? How many?
I'm going to go 3.5.
Oh, no.
Whoa.
What was that? I didn't hear anything.
Wow. What? 3.5.
Are you going to have another day like you had a couple days ago?
Yeah, probably.
That's
I'm okay.
You.
So I think it's when I'm here.
So the movie is just called John Wick?
It's called John Wick Chapter 3 Parabellum.
Okay, Chapter 3 Parabellum. How many? I'm guessing.
3.5.
Oh, I knew it'd be at least that.
Yeah, 3.5.
Here they go, right here.
All right, Dean.
You say 3.5?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right. There you go. Nice.
And according to our Doppler weather radar,
we're all going
to
die.
Columbia and Jeff City. It's in Columbia and Jeff City now, heading this way.
Did you go down to the weather center to get
70
that?
Mile per hour winds.
Oh, yeah, I guess I could have.
Why don't you go down?
All right, I will.
Go down to the weather center.
They were called. Okay.
Okay, I hear you turn the mic on down there.
Yeah,
I didn't hear the transport tube, though.
No.
Takes him down there. No, it goes both ways. You might want to.
Okay.
Come on, I'm in.
There we go. All right.
Okay. Dan, are you?
Yes.
Are you in the weather center?
I am down here. Yes.
Oh man, I can tell. There's some activity going on.
Oh yeah.
So, what are they telling you down there? Bad storms to the west.
Yes, bad storms to the west, and they're heading this way. I don't have a timeline, but they're in Jeff City in Columbia right now. So. There's some red on the map.
Is Angelique down there? She just started today. Did you meet her?
Yeah.
She's really nice.
Yeah, she is. She's on like the third computer when you walk in the door, three to the right.
Well,
yeah.
They do a great job down there. You can come come back in the studio now.
All right.
He's that quickly. He's back.
Man.
The transport, Gino put that in.
I barely got in the tube and it was back.
Do you remember the Angelique advertising campaign?
Nope.
Yeah. Angelique, I can bring home the bacon.
Yes.
Angelique. Yes.
What was the product?
Angelique's.
Perfume?
Yeah, it was a perfume. Yeah.
That was a great campaign.
Mm-hmm. Never, never, ever
let you forget you're a man.
Oh, that was, yeah.
Because
yeah.
I'm a woman.
Angelique.
That's yeah, it.
That was good.
That's her down there.
That was good. Next.
Oh. Well, as everybody knows, Game of Thrones wrapped up on Sunday.
Never didn't hear a word about it.
What day does that show come on?
It started 8 years ago. Wow. It's a very small budget indie show.
And you know these people will never have to work again. They're going to get royalties forever.
I like this show, but there's people out there that are petitioning to have the whole season 8. That's stupid.
It is stupid.
You know, I mean, look, if you don't like it, then turn it off and watch something else. I mean, they're going to, I mean, number one, the author of the books, George R.R. Martin, who wrote these books, he did not write a finale. So the people who make this show had to make up their own ending. So
George R.R., you have two middle initials?
He's got two initials, yeah. George, I just call him Martin, Mr. Martin.
He's but, Frank O'Pinion.
Yeah, maybe I should
try that.
Maybe his parents
Dan B.B. Bubba. But, I mean, I liked it. There's a lot of people that didn't like it. I thought it was a good finale. I mean, the way they brought it all together.
The dad said, why don't we name him? What's his name? George R.R. what?
George R.R. Martin. Yeah.
Let's name our son George R.R. Martin. She goes, oh, McGraw, that's a horrible name. Some people will get it.
But there was also
I talked to him Saturday night. We're friends.
That's
good. Okay.
There's also a smaller show that finished up its season was Buried. I told you about this show, right? Bill Hader, Hitman show in Hollywood. Yeah. It's more of a comedy. This show is so funny.
Because I just look stupid.
It's two seasons and they wrap it up. It's the
Maya
like,
Rudolph. Is she in that with him? Who's the girl?
No, it's Sarah Goldberg, very unknown actress, plays the lady in it.
I thought there was a
Henry Winkler is his acting coach.
Hey.
But it's a good show. It's one of those low key comedies. He plays a hitman who's trying to be an actor. He doesn't want to kill anybody anymore. And he's grappling with those decisions, and it's just a funny. It's got some drama in it and some action.
Isn't this something? No matter what Henry Winkler's done, and he's done a lot, it's still the fun.
He's really good here. He played as a former actor, now he's an acting coach. He's like a father figure to Barry, played by Bill Hader. So he tries to get him to become an actor, but he has no idea that he's a hitman. I mean, he's keeping this facade kind of very quiet. Like he's just a wannabe actor who happens to be a very well trained hitman. So. That's on as well. I think people should watch that. They won't complain about that as much as they will about Game of Thrones, but it's very much more small scale. And it's funny. Bill Hader is a funny guy. He's from Saturday Night Live. He's the kind of person, even when he's playing a serious role, he can't help but be funny. So,
well, to their credit, there aren't a lot of TV series that get the buzz Game of Thrones has not only gotten to the finale, but the whole thing.
It's going to be, I mean, I thought that Sopranos was very talked about.
Well,
Breaking Bad was very talked about.
They're the ones that have captured the entire world.
Seinfeld,
Dallas.
Maybe.
Okay, the last Seinfeld, certainly the last Dallas episode, and not only the last, but who shot J.R. Last Sopranos.
Sopranos, people still discuss that ending.
But there are
you
can't name a dozen that have been able to create this kind of following.
And I think it's just because it's a large scale thing. There's a big cast. People love that kind of show. There's action. There's drama. And also, I think people get attached to these characters. They really want to see them live, or they want to see some die.
When it comes to large scale, though, Big Fish, that movie, that you're talking about large scale.
Yeah.
Crickets, Lemmy.
Big Fish.
Crickets.
Get it? Scales. Fish have scales.
Thank I got you. It, and then I lost it.
Thank you. Let me explain to the audience what happened. It's called jealousy. It's called jealousy. I come up with something brilliant, like on a large scale, Big Fish. You can't top Big Fish. And then everybody in the room is so jealous, they tried to put it down like it wasn't
funny.
If
all your jokes were tens, no one would listen to the show. You got to have some bombs to even
the show.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you, Tim. And that's why I deliberately do that.
Every great comedian has a bomb on stage.
It props the other stuff up and makes it look even better. Thank you for noticing what I did.
It's only one way but up. You have a bad joke and you have five good ones.
Thank you. Anything, I said earlier, there's nothing in the theater that I really want to go see. I've changed my mind. John Wick.
There's a film that premiered at the Cannes Film Festival. I was here at Cannes and Cannes.
Cannes.
Cannes Film Festival. Yeah. Quentin Tarantino's new film, for the first time, premiered today. It's called Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. and it is about 1969.
Manson.
Leonardo, yeah. And that's
hey,
a
hold
big,
on a second. I'm not going to tell you again.
You called that
before I even said it.
Either you tell
us why the 69 thing is funny or stop laughing at it. Let us all in on it or stop laughing.
Does anybody get the 69?
I don't, yeah, I don't understand.
It's because I was born in 69 and they think I'm funny.
Is that it?
Tarantino looks like an alien.
He does.
He looks
very,
so weird.
But in this film, he's got the best of big cat. He got DiCaprio and Brad Pitt playing the leads. And Leonardo DiCaprio plays a fading TV star.
The biggest cast that I've ever seen in a movie was a movie called Paul Bunyan Has a Broken Leg.
Oh, my goodness.
Crickets.
Crickets. Oh. Two for two, buddy.
Holy moly.
Thanks, everybody.
That was a big cast.
Wow.
But you mentioned brilliant.
I knew it was coming.
It comes out in July. This is his ninth film. I cannot believe that QT's only made nine movies.
Yeah, but this seems like there'd be more.
His ninth movie.
Was his first big one Pulp Fiction?
Reservoir Dogs.
Okay.
And so this one comes out. It takes place in 1969 Hollywood, and DiCaprio plays a fading TV star, and Brad Pitt is his stunt double. And they get mixed up in the Charlie Manson murders. That's how the whole story goes.
It's not based on a true story.
No, it's kind of like taking the true story of the Manson murders and adding this little wrinkle to it. Margot Robbie's in it. She plays Sharon Tate, one of the victims of the Manson murders. But it's also got Timothy Oliphant. It's got Al Pacino, Kurt Russell. It's a big, long list of great actors, and it premiered today, and everybody's calling it brilliant. I can't wait for it. I read an interview from Esquire where this interview, he got to sit down Quentin Tarantino and DiCaprio and Pitt in the same room and just bounce questions off them. And I tell you, the way they describe it, it's kind of like how in Hollywood in the late 60s, things changed. Cowboy movies stopped having, you know, a hero in the lead role. It was more like anti-hero. So people started losing their jobs. That they're kind of fading out. So they're using these two main characters in DiCaprio and Pitt to kind of, these are like the dying breed, you know, the TV Western star and his stuntman. But they mix it in because they live next to Charles Manson. That's the whole hook of the plot. And so they get mixed up in that. It looks great. I mean, when Tarantino works, I don't think I've ever hated a Tarantino film. I wasn't crazy about Jackie Brown or Django Unchained, but everything he does is pretty darn good. So that comes out in July, and for the first time this morning, that premiered, and the reviews are really good. So I can't wait for that. I mean, you don't get those two guys in a movie like that.
I don't know if I'll see it or not, because I don't like when they take a true story, an event that happened, it's like that. I've seen it done with Elvis movies where the plot is
Elvis
is not only not dead, but he came to visit us at our home out in the country and stayed with us for a month.
There's something about that. I'll try to turn your head a little bit about that. Tarantino is making this. It's kind of like his tribute to when he grew up in Los Angeles. That's right around when he was a kid. Him and Brad Pitt, both of them. So it's more of a kind of a homage to his growing up days, how Hollywood was kind of changing. He thought. What he said in the interview was the Manson murders was like taking a perfect body and injecting it with a disease. That's what he thought it would do. Just throw a little bit of a wrinkle into it. So I would agree with you if anybody else did this, but if Quentin Tarantino is doing it, I have to trust him.
I'm not a book reader. Like if I see a John Grisham book, I just go, I'm not going to tackle that.
I'm more of a nonfiction guy.
But a book that I read after a long drought of not having picked up a book was Helter Skelter.
That's a good book.
I'm going to tell you something. I couldn't, when they say I couldn't put it down, That was because of the fact, first of all, it was all true. And you can't believe what you're reading. Yeah. You cannot believe that people were capable of doing what the Manson people did.
When you read about stuff, it's different when you see it, but when you read about it, it just seems like the details, you figure them out in your head the way you want to see him. And so I think it makes it more vivid than even seeing what happened or even seeing a picture. Like when I think about what Ted Bundy did, I just think in my mind, like, man, he did all that to those women. That's terrible. And in my own head, it just seems more full of gore than if I read something.
To me, it's easy to read a book and not really remember anything in the book. You ever done
that? I can see that.
Remember one part of it.
If somebody said, give me one thing that was in the book, sometimes you just go, well, nothing. I can't remember anything. Helter Skelter, there are two things in that book to this day, and I've only read it once. I cannot get out of my head. I'll tell you what they are. Vince Bugliosi, was the attorney. He was the prosecutor. He tried Matheson. He's the guy who got Charles Matheson put in prison. Vince Bugliosi. He wrote Helter Skelter. He describes a day in the courtroom where he makes eye contact with Charles Manson. And Manson literally stares him down, and he feels this evil presence. It's like Manson is trying to telepathically. Really? And Bugliosi said he looked down at his watch, and his wristwatch, for the first time ever, just stopped. Yeah, stopped. It just stopped, and it was creepy.
I'll also add this. Tarantino said that in his two characters in the movie, in DiCaprio's character in Pitt, you had two guys that were trying to be movie stars. And the way he brought in Manson was that with those murders, Manson became a bigger star than either of them. So that's the whole idea why he brought them in. He said, here's a guy who didn't look like a movie star. He was hairy, he was short, he didn't look great. And then you have guys
like
DiCaprio and Pitt, who were just, man, they're movie stars. Even if Brad Pitt's a stunt double, in this way, he stole the spotlight from these two guys. And of course, in the movie, I think his name is Rick Dalton, is who DiCaprio plays. He lives next to Sharon Tate, who basically dated Roman Polanski back in the day. Mm-hmm. And that's why he's trying to get to know her, because Roman Polanski was coming off. He was an Oscar winner. He was a very hot director back then.
Dan, you know him, Rick Dalton. He was at Acacia.
Yeah, he was.
Well, it was Rich Dalton. So different guy. Oh, you want to know the other part of the book I've never gotten out of my head?
Well, second part.
Did you read the book?
I did not.
Okay,
I might have to now.
Three things. One of the things that really jumped out at me, when the Manson people went to that house and they killed all those people, Sharon Tate and all those people, they jumped in a van, and in the van they changed out of their blood-soaked clothes, and they bundled them up, put them in a trash bag or something, and tossed them out the window of the van, and they had on bloodless clothes, clean clothes.
Yeah.
One of the things the police could not locate was those clothes.
Wow.
Do you know who found those bloody clothes? And before I tell you who it was, I'll tell you how he did it. He recreated the situation. He took some people. They went to the house, Sharon, to where the murders took place. Then they jumped in a van, and they started driving along the route they knew. And they changed clothes and threw them out the window. They stopped the van, and down the hill where they did that were the bloody clothes of the Manson people. And the guy who did it and found them was a guy named Al Wyman, who was a newsman at Channel 4 here in St. Louis.
Imagine
at
that.
At the time he worked for KTLA, which I think was an ABC affiliate. He found the clothes.
So basically, I imagine like Mulholland Falls, those big old cliffs. I imagine they just tossed them down there.
And they went down to see where they landed, and right within a few feet were the bloody clothes.
And I imagine they had all kinds of DNA and prints and everything on them, I guess.
Well, I just remember when I read the name, I thought, that's the guy who's on TV here, Al Wyman.
Just imagine.
Back then they didn't test for DNA,
That,
right?
That was going to be my question.
Handprints, though? I mean, maybe
like, test back in the
maybe
day,
fingerprints
did,
and stuff.
Well, you don't need DNA. You can do, I guess you do, because a lot of people have the same blood type.
Yeah.
Yeah, but how did they initially catch Charles Manson and his followers? Like, how did they know it was them that did this
act? I'd have to go back and do some digging.
Well, in the movie, I don't know how much of a truth Tarantino puts in it, but he lived really next door to Sharon Tate. They lived like very close to them.
Oh, wow.
To show you how evil Manson was, even though he did not himself kill any of those people.
The actor playing him in the movie is good. He's from a show called Justified. Damon Herman is playing Charles Manson.
Here's how evil he was. In that book, and I may not get every detail right, but it's pretty close. There's a part of that book where Manson tells, you know, Manson did lots of interviews, and he's kind of proud.
Because he wanted the attention. He wanted the attention.
And there's a part of the book where, and maybe the guy he was with told this story, but Charles Manson and this guy are in Los Angeles in traffic, and Manson pulls out a hunting knife. Now, Manson, I believe, was in the right seat of the car, there at a stoplight, and over next to Charles Manson at the stoplight is a guy in a Corvette convertible. And Charles Manson said, watch this, I'll show you how easy it is to kill somebody. I'm going to slit this guy's throat. I'm going to step out of the car, go over, slit his throat, jump back in, the light will turn green, and we'll take off. And as he opened the door with a knife to slit the throat of the guy next to him in traffic, the light turned green, and the guy took off. I've never gotten out of my head that somewhere there is a guy who was sitting at a light who has no idea.
Can you imagine?
He was 5 seconds away from having his throat slit.
He's basically probably had, all he's thinking about is Did I leave something? Did I leave the stove on at home? Did I lock my door?
Yeah.
And he's got a guy next to him.
He's got Charles Manson in traffic, opened the door to come cut his throat, and the light changes.
Wow.
I cannot get out of
that. Yeah, because when he did this, he got all the attention. All the movie stars fell to the wayside. He was the star. It's like Bonnie and Clyde. When they were doing that, they became the sensation.
Okay, a hand is raised. Yes, Tim Woodburn.
A 10-year-old boy found the gun used in the Tate murders back in 1969, and then Manson himself and one of his co-defendants, Susan Atkins, bragged about their roles in the murders to other people that they were in jail with for other crimes, and they ratted them out.
Remember one of the girls in the house?
That's how they got him.
Abigail Folger, heir to the Folger's coffee fortune. She was in the house.
We have a couple of calls.
I'm just hoping. I want to see if Tarantino mixes some of this true story into his
fictional. I think he will. Okay, you want to take a couple quick calls here?
Yeah. We can do that before we have to break. First is Ed. Ed, welcome to 590 The Fan. How you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm AMPM, by the way. Thank you. I know we're running close on time, so I'll keep mine quick. Dan, I was wondering, after a patient 14-year wait, I can't wait for the Deadwood movie. I was wondering if you got any inside track on it, and if you do, what do you think of it? And I'll hang up and listen. Love your show, guys.
All right, thank you, Ed.
I am just starting Deadwood. I am a guy that just I wanted to get into it, but then when they made this movie, which comes out next month, and it's just a basic continuation.
Didn't the original Deadwood like 10, 15 years ago? Because I think I tried to watch
it. I think I want to say 10 maybe, because it was Ian McShane who played Al Swearengen, and it was Timothy Oliphant played Seth Bullock.
Yeah.
And it basically continues their story. And I am on episode one, and I can tell you, it's a good show. I mean, even just watching the first episode, the pilot, I mean, they really, David Milch, I think, is the one that did this show. He created it. It's a show that Quentin Tarantino liked because there's a lot of F-bombs in it. I think there's the most registered F-bombs
in an hour. And, you know, I remember trying
television.
To watch it, and here, this is weird. I grew up, and I'm so accustomed to watching Westerns with no cursing, that when I watched this, I thought, well, you know, Roy Rogers never talked like that.
Yeah,
I mean, it seemed weird to me.
That was a whole thing. I think one TV critic counted the amount of F-bombs in a season, and it was
I do remember that, and I thought, this is a Western, but the truth is, that's probably the way they might have talked.
But I also love Timothy Oliphant, and Justified, he played a U.S. Marshal, Waylon Givens, so he's playing a U.S. Marshal in this one, so any role that's got him playing a U.S. Marshal, I'm in. So in response to that question, it comes out next month, I am an hour into it, but the movie, the trailer looks great. So.
Okay, Jim is next. Jim, welcome to 590 The Fan. What's up?
Hi, Frank. This is Jim. Thanks for taking my call, as you always do. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, Jim.
Frank, do you remember, I don't know if you mentioned it, when Doris Day passed away, her son, Terry Melcher?
Terry Melcher was a friend of Manson.
He was a friend of Manson. Manson wanted Melcher to produce a song for him because he did a lot of producing for the Beach Boys.
Right.
Melcher didn't like it. It, you know what made Manson extremely angry? And I think Manson thought Melcher was still living in the house.
No, you're exactly right.
He originally lived in the house where those people were killed. And I think he originally wanted to get Melcher, not those people that were in that house.
You're absolutely right. He was going after Terry Melcher, Doris Day's son, and he had the wrong house. Right. How about that? Just people, innocent people happened to be in the wrong house. Wow. No,
Frank,
you're right.
I think Melcher had the house before Sharon Tate rented it. I think that Melcher was the previous owner, and I think Manson, in his demented way, thought Melcher was
living. No, but that's what I'm saying. You're a bunch of innocent people. You just happened to be that night in the house you shouldn't have been in, the wrong house, because this lunatic.
Because I've always wondered, did he really mean to kill Sharon Tate?
No.
He's just whoever was in
the
house.
No.
He was after Terry Melcher.
Yeah. Wow.
Melcher wouldn't produce his songs. Anyway, I know you're up against a hard break soon, but again, Frank, always good. Thank you, Bernice. Thanks again for talking to me. I appreciate it. Talk to you later.
Anytime, Jim.
The guy playing him in the movie is good. I can't wait to see it.
I saw, remember Daryl Dragon? He was the captain of Captain and Tennille.
Yeah.
He died a year or two ago. Recently.
Really?
Yeah, Dragon. Yeah, he died. He and Dragon, the captain of Captain and Tennille, he had some association with Manson, too, because Manson thought he was a great songwriter.
Yeah.
And he played a little guitar. He was horrible.
So I do have a good story about Burt Reynolds and this Tarantino film.
Well, we have 3 minutes. Go ahead.
So he was going to be in the movie, and he was cast, and he read through the script with he did a read with the whole cast. Brad Pitt talked
for this
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and okay. Brad Pitt said, "Man, to spend 2 days with Burt Reynolds was great." And the Tarantino heard from a few sources that when right before he had a heart attack, he had just read over the script with his assistant, and he went into the bathroom and he had a heart attack.
Wow.
That was the last thing. That was the last thing he read. And that's one of the biggest tragedies of Tarantino's, that he never got to actually get Reynolds on film. Was he? I mean, the role he was going to play was great. So
I was in a press conference with the captain and Tennille, with Daryl Dragon and Tony Tennille, SIU Edwardsville, when there was the Mississippi River Festival. I'm standing off the side watching people interview him, and apparently Daryl Dragon, the captain, had specifically said before the press conference, "Don't anybody ask me about Charles Manson," because he had
somebody did.
Some numbskull reporter said,
"Darn writers, I swear."
Can you talk a little bit about your man? And this guy Daryl Dragon, who never said anything, stood up and lost it. He went nuts.
The first question
had the guy. It was into the press conference. Oh, he had the guy thrown out, and he said, "We're done." And he turns to Tony Tennille and gets up, and they just storm out of there. It was over.
I mean, it's simple instructions. I mean, and look, we get that whenever we get to interview actors. They always say, "Don't ask this. Don't ask this." If they're in a relationship with a big movie music star, don't ask them. We do that.
When John Lovitz, and Dan remembers this, it was one of the worst interviews ever. John Lovitz came in our studio. I always ask the same thing before we go on. I don't care who it is. I say, is there any John Lovitz, Saturday Night Live?
Yeah.
Morgan Fairchild.
League of Their Own.
Yeah.
Great.
So I said, is there anything you don't want me to ask you? And immediately he said, "Don't ask me about Phil Hartman." So the last thing I was going to do was go, "Hey, tell us a little bit about Phil Hartman." I'm not going to do that. But they were best friends. And he didn't want to talk about
that's
it.
Terrible.
So
funny guy
what?
Too.
Guess what? We didn't bring it up.
He wasn't funny on our show. He was horrible.
No, he's talking about Hartman.
Phil Hartman.
Hartman.
Phil Hartman is the single most talented guy to ever be on SNL. Nobody could touch him. He was great.
Just so funny.
Well, once again,
we've reached the end.
Kind of like a poem. There you go. You are brought to everybody by Window World. I want to make sure they know
that's
that.
Right.
Number one selling replacement window in the United States. WindowWorldSt.Louis.com. Give them. I know you don't get a lot of emails. Not like Josh.
I do.
Josh Bauman. Everybody's going, "I can't get my phone to do the." You know.
I drove the Fox employee to work 3 days that 1 week. He gave me that email. That was nice.
Liz,
I drove her all 3 days.
She's the greatest.
I wonder how her knee's doing. I just want to email her.
I love Liz. Give them your email address.
Buffa82@gmail.com. I answer emails. I don't like, wait till they get to be 100 in there, so I do it.
Okay. We'll do it again
next Tuesday.
Next Tuesday.
Until then, I'm Dan Buffa. I've had enough of it.
All right. He's had enough of it. So have I. Dan Buffa.
You say Sacagawea?
No, he's had enough of so have a wea. It was just a stupid thing to say. My dentist is Dr. Obi-Wan Kenobi Watanabe. He's at Ballast Dental Care. He has been my dentist for 46 years. I don't want to go anywhere else. The thought of going, if I moved, honestly, if I got a job offer, which I won't, but if I did in, pick a place. Thank you for the John Wick movie. Lake Tahoe. Let's pick a nice place. I think I'd still come back to St. Louis to go to the dentist. I don't ever want to go anywhere else. That's how fantastic Ballast Dental Care is. I don't know how many dentists are in St. Louis. 200? 300? I don't know. I've never once wanted to go to any of them. We have a friend, longtime friend. His kids play tennis with my daughter. He's a dentist. He's a good dentist. He's a dentist here in St. Louis. I've never been once to him. His feelings aren't hurt. He knows Ballast Dental Care, and he understands why I don't have any interest in going anywhere else. And once you make one appointment, you're not going to have any interest in going anywhere else either. You're going to fire your current dentist, if that would be the right term. You're going to tell him or her, "Hey, nice knowing you, but I'm not coming here anymore. I had one appointment at Ballast Dental Care. Wow, I never thought there was such a place." Well, there is. And if you'd like to make an appointment, go to this website. All the info is there. BallastDentalCare.com. They're at the corner of Ballast and Clayton Roads. News is next. followed by a little bit of Bill Cleveland, the Playhouse, the Chit Chat, the Joke, and Mike Evans, and then it'll be time for us to go home. It's 5 o'clock at 590 The Fan.
This is Tim McKernan. You are listening to 590 The Fan, KFNS, Wood River, St. Louis, the home of Budweiser.
NBC News Radio, I'm Brian Shook. The House Judiciary Committee is sending subpoenas to former White House Communications Chief Hope Hicks and Annie Donaldson, an aide to former White House Counsel Don McGahn. That followed McGahn's refusal to testify before the panel in a hearing today. The White House instructed McGahn not to testify about Special Counsel Robert Mueller's final report. A growing number of House Democrats are pushing to open impeachment proceedings against President Trump.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi will hold a closed meeting with her caucus Wednesday morning to discuss the issue. Pelosi has been cool to the idea of impeachment for